I mean, I don't know. Do we really need all the details?
No, I just, you know.
I mean, I know some stuff, so let's just freeball it.
I don't think that's how you use that phrase. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me again, Keith Foster from San Diego, California.
That's right, and the birth father of this podcast is with me, Cassidy Robinson from Los Angeles, California.
Mm-hmm. And you were about to rant about something. I think you texted me that earlier than I am normally awake.
I forget that some people don't get up at 6 in the morning like I do.
Right. You texted me that you had such a good idea about possible Deadpool sequel that whatever they end up making will not satisfy unless they do exactly what you're talking about, right?
Yes, and they won't. So it's not like a plot point so much as like how I would structure the movie. So for like the first, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, right? The first 10, 15 minutes would be the end of Deadpool 2. Then roll credits. Then do the rest of the movie, like a solid hour and a half movie as a post-credit sequence.
Oh, like, so you would roll the entire credit sequence.
Yes, roll the entire credit sequence, and make the audience stay through the credits.
They'd be like, what the fuck? And then at the end of that, like, the whole, like, hour and a half would be the shawarma.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah. So it would end a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the last 15 minutes would be, like, the climax of a movie, and have it be, like, you know, have the audience, like, just go directly into it. Like, the film broke or something, and it's like, you're just walking in, and you're like, what the fuck did I miss? And have, like, a whole climax, right?
Uh-huh.
Then roll credits, and then do the whole actual movie as a post-credit stinger.
Okay, that's cute. See, at first I thought you were just talking about, like, a non-linear thing. I'm like, that's literally what they did in the first one.
No. No, like, you would never get any of the setup for the climax. So, like, you would never actually see Deadpool 2. This would be, like, Deadpool 2.5.
I get it. I get what you're saying.
Everything in the post-credit stinger, like, they might reference the movie that didn't actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be the actual movie, is the post-credit stinger.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, modern day blockbusters that start in the middle of the action. I think every Star Trek movie.
I'm not even talking about starting in the middle of the action. I'm talking about starting it like the audience is like, what the fuck is this? Like, I missed everything.
Right.
Like, and then just have that end and never resolve it. That's not what the post-credit stinger would be about. Like, it wouldn't be building to what we just saw at the beginning. The beginning would be a total non sequitur.
Okay, but the real question is after the hour and a half where the movie happens, would there be another post-credit?
No. No, you already ran the credits.
Oh, okay.
So it's literally like 15 minutes in, you run the credits for the movie they're about to see.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. Do it like they had just watched the movie.
All right. Well, that one's for free, Hollywood.
I'm serious. Like, when I go to see Deadpool and it's totally conventional, I'm going to be like, yeah, no, this is dumb.
Isn't there an app now? I think there's an app or there's a website you can check to find out how many post-credit scenes there are, or if there is one and you should wait.
There are a couple, and we actually were a little misguided by The Last Jedi because of one of those.
Oh, did you not stay or did you stay?
We stayed. And there was nothing during our screening.
I didn't think there would be, so I left.
I heard that some screenings, it didn't have to do with the movie, so I don't feel like I'm blowing my load talking about it now.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess some screenings had like a tribute to Carrie Fisher.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But it wasn't like any Easter egg-y kind of thing. But I was still bummed. Like, I would have liked to have seen that.
The Carrie Fisher thing or the whatever Easter egg they could have come up with?
No, the Carrie Fisher thing.
All right. I mean, we'll get into it, but, you know, Last Jedi, pretty much the entire thing is a tribute to Carrie Fisher.
Well, sure, but...
But yeah, we're not going to talk about that right away.
Yeah. We're gonna bury the lead on that motherfucker.
Yeah, we are talking about the new Star Wars film, Episode 8, The Last Jedi. We're also going to be reviewing El Camino Christmas, which you inflicted on me last week.
Hey, bury the lead.
And we're going to cover some movie news, which we haven't done for a little bit.
Movie news. Talking about that movie news.
Some of this is a little bit old. We're at a yellow light on some of these stories, but they're big, and we never got to put in our 2 cents. So let's start with this one. I'm not going to bury the lead here. Quentin Tarantino, Star Trek. We talked about this when he was first sort of being floated around the project, said he was interested. Well, now he's, I guess, sort of informally attached. And we joked that, of course, it's not going to be an R-rated movie, and Quentin is going to obviously have an idea of what he's working with and what the genre rules are, and he's going to play along. Well, apparently not. He says it is now required to be R-rated, and Paramount and Abrams agreed on that condition. Most mega budget temples are PG-13, blah, blah, blah. We know that. But funnily enough, this is not going to be written by Tarantino. The screenwriter is going to be Mark L. Smith, who wrote The Revenant.
Mm-hmm.
So we got this movie. This is already like the most I don't even know what to think project. Like, yeah. It almost feels like a big troll. Like this, like none of this can be real. Like this is leading up to like a April 1st gotcha reveal online or something.
Yeah, because I thought sort of the whole point was Tarantino was going to write it, but uh-huh. maybe that's his loophole for keeping it out of his ten film canon.
Yeah,
because he's not going to write and direct. But I think it sounds like he's still developing the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't really need a Star Trek movie to be rated R. Honestly,
I don't either.
I think, you know, like, I think Deadpool has Hollywood with, like, R-rated movie fever.
Right.
And I think it's dumb. I think way too much emphasis is put on the rating of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we can get away with that, away from that, the better. Like, the rating of a movie is not going to hype me up or disparage me either way. I just want them to tell a good fucking story. And
unless it was like we heard there was going to be a NC-17 Digimon reboot.
Yes, I would have to see that. I would fucking have to see that.
Right.
But honestly, an R-rated Star Trek movie doesn't sound that far off for me.
No, I mean, like, it could happen, and like, you know, especially if they're going to push the violence or something like that. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. To me, this feels very un-Star Trek. Here's my issue with this entire enterprise. No pun intended.
Oh, I was going to do a pretty bad one myself about boldly going where no man has gone before, but keep going.
My problem with this whole thing is it feels like it's a lot of people's egos on the line. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like anyone's doing any service to Star Trek as a franchise, as a fandom, as a pop culture entity. That's existed for a long time. It feels like it's a bunch of people seeing, I don't know, just trying to play the audience like an orchestra and see how much hype they can build.
Yeah, I feel like everyone is kind of coming into it with good intentions. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see. I don't think it's going to happen. I kind of don't either. It's still so early in development that... Mm-hmm. A billion things could happen. I think Quentin Tarantino likes
the idea of directing somebody else's script, but I think when the reality of that starts to come into play,
yeah,
he's not going to like that as much. And I think he's going to want to get in there and re-edit the screenplay 150 times over until he's bored with the idea and moves on to something else.
That sounds pretty likely. I just don't need an R-rated Star Trek movie. I just tell a good Star Trek story. Focus on that first.
Uh-huh.
And if it happens to be R-rated, so be it.
Uh-huh.
But don't, like, force it.
Right.
Don't have Bones just saying, "But Jim, I'm a doctor, not a motherfucker." I think I already made that joke.
You did. I like that that's your idea of a Tarantino Star Trek.
It's only logical, Jim, that we are motherfuckers. I don't know why Spock would ever say that.
I don't either. I don't know why it would ever be logical. Okay, so what was the last story?
It was the Marvel-Fox merger. Disney.
Disney. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what there is to say about that other than 20th Century Fox was acquired by Disney, or that there was some sort of merger between the two.
Yeah, so it was rumored for a while. I think a lot of people still don't have the details, so it's hard to find a good article on this one to reference.
Right.
But from what it sounds like, I heard that they purchased all of Fox Media except for Fox News, ironically enough.
Mm.
Which is actually kind of unfortunate because I don't know.
Well, I think I saw an article or a headline of an article that said that Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News, didn't really give a shit about the movies.
Yeah. I also heard one article said that Rupert Murdoch is having a King Lear moment.
Okay.
Anyway, so what that means... We know for sure is that so Marvel now has the rights to all their film characters back, which I think is a mixed bag, kind of like my trepidations with Spider-Man Homecoming. It was really great, but part of what made, I think, Marvel Studios successful is they had to take risks on stuff like Iron Man and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hate to see them just like clean slate for X-Men. We'll see what happens with X-Men, because I know they have a lot of TV properties right now that are getting some good hype.
Right. X-Men is kind of a volatile situation in a lot of ways. So on one hand, you have this proper X-Men universe X-Men movie coming out, the Dark Phoenix one. Which is in post-production, I think. I think that's already been shot.
Well, plus you've got New Mutants.
I
think is even further along than...
Mm-hmm. And there hasn't... Well, didn't we do a story about how they were trying to do X-Force and X-Factor?
Oh, I'm sure all of that is, like, up in the air. Oh, they did acquire the rights to Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
Which a lot of people are like, will Deadpool still be rated R? My comments earlier about just make it a good movie and rate it what it is. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see. I mean,
Oh, and component to all of this, you know, the singer verse, as some have called it, is could be up in the air because Bryan Singer could be up in the air right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if they're gonna do it, let's just redo it. Let's do like Spider-Man. Let's rip the Band-Aid off, clean cut, new cast, new do your own thing.
I agree.
Don't be beholden to, because then it's going to get murky real quick.
Especially since Logan was such a perfect cap to all of that.
Here's the thing. I think, exactly. I think just kind of let it be. I mean, the Dark Phoenix thing, that's still going to happen, but just let it be at that point. And I think the best thing as far as the Marvel stuff goes is the Fantastic Four. Maybe finally we can get a good Fantastic Four movie.
That would be lovely. I'm afraid at this point, just the name Fantastic Four, or even just putting a four in the title of something like the next.
Nah, man. If anybody can get it right, it's Marvel.
No, I agree, but I think that just the optics of it is it could be box office poison right now because they've went up to the bat and swung and missed several times on that.
I think people
are losing their faith on that franchise. I know people personally who, when I say you can possibly do a good Fantastic Four movie, they just don't believe me. They don't believe that it's not the way
so
it
here's
was
the
done.
Thing.
It was,
but what are they? What's Marvel going to do with it? They're going to introduce them through another movie that we're already going to see.
Mm.
So it's like Spider-Man is, in Spider-Man 2 is going to have a scene where he jumps on the Baxter Building, and that's going to be it. And people are going to lose their fucking minds, and then it's going to be like, oh yeah, they're doing it. They're doing their own Fantastic Four, and so it's going to be like.
I think
4 years down the line, if they follow the same methodical pattern that they've done and has been successful, I think they'll build that hype right back up real quick.
You're right. I don't know why I second guess it.
Also, that means that Marvel can get over their fucking petty vendetta and reintroduce the Fantastic Four in the comic books.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah. It was real petty.
Okay, so that's the movie news. We're all caught up, and we're going to head into our Star Wars coverage. Star Wars reviews.
Wait.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I almost forgot. You saw a movie I did not.
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago, I went and saw Coco, Disney Pixar. Speaking of Disney. And you were going to try to see it, but you dropped the ball big time. So I'm going to just sort of tell you what's going on, and I'll try to keep it spoiler free. So Coco is about this kid who, he's a little Mexican boy who lives with his family who hates music. Sort of this long, story about how the original patriarch of the family, left the family to pursue his music career. The great-great-grandmother raised everyone, and now we're so many generations down, and there's just this rule in this family that the music is just not allowed. But then there's this little boy, Miguel, and he just has this thing in him where he loves music. He has a secret shrine to this famous music star, sort of like a Mexican Elvis, and he secretly taught himself how to play guitar, and breaks it. This is sort of a long setup. He breaks into the vault of this singer and has to steal his guitar because his guitar gets smashed. And when he plays it, he's transported because it's during Day of the Dead.
Right.
And when he plays it, because he took someone else's property on someone who is dead's property on Day of the Dead, he's transported to the land of the dead. And the movie is about him having to find his way back to the land of the living in time to do stuff. So this is, this is, you know, Disney Pixar. So you get sort of what you're expecting with that. I don't think it reaches the highest highs of like Inside Out or Up or Wall-E. But I don't think this is like a low point either. I really enjoyed it. My biggest criticism is the whole setup. It's sort of a long contrived story to get Miguel to the land of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Even just in my description, it was kind of hard to sort of truncate that.
Right.
Because there's a lot of work with this sort of family legacy, which is pretty important to the plot. The movie really starts when he gets to the land of the dead. And man, is it beautiful when he does. I think this might be one of Pixar's prettiest movies.
Okay.
Like, just the animation is gorgeous. It's a lot of fun. There's some twists that I didn't see coming, that I definitely don't want to bring up too much about.
Uh-huh.
You go on a journey. And to me, it was really effective. My wife, Ashley, she said she saw the twist coming. And there's a couple. She said she sort of figured stuff out, but I didn't, and it was pretty effective on me. I think it's cool to see. Disney's always, I think, embraced diversity.
In the last few decades, traditionally.
It's cool to see a story that I didn't have like any sort of cultural attachment to,
mm-hmm.
But they definitely put the same kind of time and care into it. And I have a few friends who are of Latino descent, and they really enjoyed it and were really psyched to get representation in a major way for this movie.
Right. I know that this movie was released in Mexico first, I believe.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and there's actually a version of it you can see that's in Spanish, not in English. And I think they screen it both ways here in L.A.
Yeah, that's great.
And I heard, you know, it made like a bunch of money in Mexico before it even was opened in America. Like, it was like one of the highest grossing films in Mexico.
And I think the whole cast is either Mexican or Mexican descent.
Or Latin, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was, I think, really cool. And I think added a lot to the authenticity of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. If you like Pixar movies, you're not going to be disappointed. Like, it's definitely got the same sort of quality.
The stuff that works.
I did expect it to be a musical, and it's not. Like, it's not a musical in the sense that the music is a surreal break from reality,
mm-hmm.
like Frozen or, you know, more traditional Disney. All of the music is built into the plot. They sing songs, they're
diegetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of disappointed me. Like, I expected it was going to be more of a musical.
Well, I was going to ask a couple questions, and it has to do with that. One, I was going to say, how's the music?
It's good. I mean, it's definitely, got a Latin flavor, and it's got a Latin flavor of a specific time period. Like, this movie star, Ernesto de la Cruz.
Uh-huh.
Is very of a very specific time era, like kind of when my history is gonna prove how ignorant I am right now. Mm-hmm. But like the time period when the Three Amigos is set.
Okay.
Well, you know how the Three Amigos were like these stars and
right.
It's of that same sort of period and stuff. So the music is also of that period.
Okay.
You know, very guitar, sort of Mexican folky pop songs.
All right.
But I think that Remember Me is going to be a strong contender for best Oscar song.
Cool. And the other question I was going to ask was, how does this movie compare to the Guillermo del Toro produced but not directed The Book of Life, which came out a few years ago? Yeah, it came out a few years ago, and it was also about Day of the Dead.
Yeah, I've heard that comparison. I never saw The Book of Life, so I can't fully say. I don't know. I think they have sort of different plots.
It sounds different, but it sounds similar. Like the idea of being, a main character being transported into the land of the dead and you know, singing all these songs with colorful skeletons.
Sure, like,
that's happening in both movies. But I saw.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, how many Christmas movies have to do with a little kid restoring the meaning of Christmas to Santa Claus. Fair enough. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think we see that, those comparisons a lot more because we're not culturally, you know, we don't have the cultural background.
Right.
So to us, it sort of translates as Adventure to the Land of the Dead. Whereas for all I know, they're pretty different.
Okay. All right. Yeah,
but again, I can't really compare the two because I haven't seen The Book of Life.
I saw it and I wasn't crazy about it, to be totally honest.
Okay,
I mean, I was sort of in the minority. A lot of people really, really liked that movie, but that for the soundtrack, they tried to do sort of the like jukebox musical thing. So they used like modern pop songs and take them out of context, but played like mariachi style.
Gotcha.
It was weird, and a lot of times the song choices were either on the nose or just bizarre.
I don't think Coco has that problem. They're all original songs, original music. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it was a little hard for me to get into. Like, I think the first 15, 20 minutes even is a little like, okay, where's this going? But by the end of it, it pulls some of the old Pixar heartstrings.
Right.
It's funny, it's emotional, and like I said, it's worth seeing for the art design alone.
It also kind of sounds like the plot of Rockadoodle, but
kind of.
I mean, there's lots of stories about kids being sucked into magical worlds, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I think it's a little culturally insensitive to say that it's just, you know, it ripping it off or so similar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's similar in the way that Dante's Peak and Volcano are both about volcanoes, but they're pretty different.
Right. All right. Cool. I hope to see it at some point. I don't know if I'm going to be able to before the end of the year, but I've heard good things.
It's definitely worth seeing. It's not Pixar royalty to me, but it's definitely upper mid tier.
Yeah, well, this was their B picture of the year because they already did a Cars sequel, and I think that was their big summer movie. But I think
it kind of went the other way.
It did go the other way. I think this movie got more acclaim, and because people want original stories, they're fucking sick of Cars movies, man.
Yeah,
they're over it.
But we are not over Incredibles 2.
Yeah, the one sequel I've wanted from them forever.
So fucking pumped for that.
All right, let's get into Star Wars. And
when we last left our heroes, they were reviewing movies about other bullshit. Keith swore a lot. I was trying to do a whole front scroller.
But. I got what you were doing. Before we get into this, let's go ahead and play an audio clip.
That's right,
friend of the show, Mike Valick. He was going to be on the show. You had invited him the last time he was on.
We had some unfinished Star Wars business.
Some biznaz. He sent us the audio before he actually saw the movie, so the audio is unrelated to the movie. But we'll play it.
Yeah, it's a cool little hidden behind the scenes gem.
An exclusive. Yeah. He managed to dig up the crates. He found some hidden audio.
I don't even know how he got his hands on it, really. It's pretty impressive.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And this is Jabber and the Drone exclusive. Here we go.
Hello, Jabber and Drone. I'm sorry I couldn't be on the show. It's an issue where I'm stupid. So you couldn't have seen that coming, especially not me, because I'm stupid. So I can't be there today. But this is really crazy. Okay, actual story. I got invited to apply to be like the new curator at the George Lucas Museum of Film. I'm not going to do that because that sounds like a horrible job. But now this is where it's not a joke. Now there's no joke happening. Wink. They accidentally sent me when they asked me to apply. They sent me like, I don't know, some secret recordings, and I think this is on the set of Revenge of the Sith between the actor who plays Lord Sidious and George Lucas. This is crazy. So I figured you're doing a Star Wars thing. I can't be there, but I'm sending you this audio because it's insane. So I'll play it for you now.
Okay, everybody cut. Ian, can you come over here for a second? I want to talk to you.
Yes. Hello, George. What seems to be going on with the scene?
Well, you're not really taking my direction the way I wanted you to.
George, am I really to you? What you want me to do with my voice to go up and down and it all in between with the tone of it just randomly
at random. Just whatever. Low voice, high voice, do whatever. Just mix it around. That's what I want from this scene.
Okay, I don't really want to do that, George. It doesn't really make sense. You go up and down and then things like the Empire. It doesn't sound right to me, George. You know, I when I played saying,
can I tell you a story instead of you telling one?
I'd really rather not, George. There's lots of people working and do we have to do this now?
Okay, one time, Martin Scorsese...
Oh, joke, not again about Martin Scorsese.
No, he was mean, he was a bully, okay? I showed Martin Scorsese Star Wars, and then later that day, him and Harvey Keitel were smoking cigarettes behind the bleachers, okay? And Harvey Keitel said, hey, war nerd, hey, you got a laser sword on you? And I said, Harvey, laser swords, I'm not sure, go to laser sword lightsaber, I'm not sure what to do in the movie, what do you think? He goes, I think you're a dork, and pushed me, and Steven Spielberg saw it, and he said, that was so mean, he helped me up, clean my pants, went back to his place, played D&D, I showed him my little warplanes for an hour and a half, it was great. Then we went into his dad's room, found nudie magazines, of girl boobs. So that's when you play this scene.
How old were you?
I was 25. Okay? 25. Me and Steven Spielberg playing D&D with my little World War I planes. Okay? Now you think about that when you play it.
Okay, George, I'll go up and down and I'm even starting now to do this weird voice thing.
You're getting into character now.
Okay. But George, there's one other point we really, really must discuss. I think you know what it is.
And what's the problem with the scene?
Well, George, I really think we should call him Darth Vader.
No, you gotta call him Nutch Vader. Everybody's call back to the movie. Everybody calls him Nutch Vader.
George, I really, it's Darth Vader. I think everyone wants me to say, Rise, Darth Vader.
No, you gotta call him Nutch. All the kids call him Nutch. C-3PO says he's Nutch Vader. No, come on, the scene's not gonna work. You don't call him. Look, you wanna say it. You don't wanna make your voice change tones every four words. That's fine. We're calling him Nutch Vader, okay? Or else, me and Steven, we know some tough guys, some. Oh, gee, oh God, I don't know that. I don't know that many tough guys, but we could take you on. You don't know if you strike me down.
I'm not going to hit you, George. Please.
Okay, don't strike me down. Because one time, nobody got our movies. And one time, Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese...
George, enough, really.
No, it's mean.
I really think we shouldn't call him Nutch Vader.
Why don't you try it with Nutch Vader? And if not, we'll change it in post. We'll change you in post. Change the whole movie in post. Okay? All right, everybody. Let's do some Star Wars!
Arise, Nooch Vader. How's that, George?
Great!
So there you go.
Man, that was crazy.
Insane.
So cool.
So cool. I mean, I thought, you know, you have an idea of what these people
you know
are
what?
Like.
I think it just speaks for itself.
Does it speak for itself?
I think so.
Okay. All right.
I think so. So, moving on.
He also sent in, I should say, he also sent us a written comment about the Star Wars The Last Jedi after he saw it.
Should we set up the movie first?
Yeah, I'll get into that, to his feelings on the movie when we get to a certain point of the review.
Because
I think it'll open up the discussion in a specific way.
Okay.
But yes, should I set this up? You did, Coco. I guess I have to, don't I? Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. This is written and directed by Rian Johnson, who previously did the movies Looper and Brick and Brothers Bloom. You know, kind of a indie genre director that people had a lot of high hopes for. And he comes in here and he's taking over the franchise now that J.J. Abrams did his entry. I think Abrams is coming back now for the final entry of this new trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Which was originally going to go to Colin Trevorrow, and then he left. But this picks up where the last adventure left off. So, Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, is now on the hidden planet where Mark Hamill / Luke Skywalker has been living as a hermit and trying to hide away and stay out of all of the Star Wars. And she has a lot of questions about the Force, which she is now starting to reckon with, and has now found her potential to be a Jedi, and she wants to learn more about it, blah, blah, blah. Also learn more about her history, since she doesn't remember who her parents are, where she came from, blah, blah, blah. Whilst the rest of the gang, Poe Dameron, played by Oscar Isaac, and Finn, played by John Boyega, is fighting with the Resistance, which is led by Carrie Fisher's Princess Leia, and they are trying to basically not get killed, as their Starfleet is now being tracked, even during light speed,
mm-hmm.
by the what is the new dark side called?
The evil guys, the First Order.
The First Order, yes, led by the vengeful Kylo Ren, son of Leia and Han Solo, who has his own issues. And yeah, that's pretty much catching us up to where we are.
So I don't know.
Things happen.
I'm going to try not to be too spoilery, but I know there's already so many spoilers out there.
Mm-hmm.
I also know, like, a lot of people have already seen this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just giving a preemptive spoiler warning.
Sure.
That maybe, I don't know. Just be careful.
Yeah. Tread lightly on this review if you haven't seen it before, but I have a hard time believing that's the case.
Yeah.
Especially if you're listening to this.
So let's get into it. What did you think? What are your thoughts? What is your takeaway? I think you might have a better idea of how I felt about it if you follow me on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of we've been having a lot of conversations about this on Facebook over the last week. I saw the movie a little late, you know, because I don't like the midnight at Thursday experience anymore. I'm so over that.
Well, you know that they have like 8 o'clock at Thursday experiences now, because most people are over it.
I honestly, with movies that are this big, with your Marvel Adventures, your whatever the Disney owns, I would rather wait till a Sunday or a Monday, either early in the day or late at night to see it with as few people as possible. So because of that,
first of all, how'd that go?
It went well. I saw it on Monday and I saw it with a crowd of like-minded non-children. The reason I brought that up is to say that, you know, a lot of my friends and stuff had already seen it days before me, and I was getting whisperings of opinions, and I was trying to avoid as much of that as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and saw the movie, and, you know, I have the my approach.
All right.
My approach to the Star Wars franchise at this point is I have my Star Wars films, episodes 4 through 6. That's my Star Wars. It, you know, yes, they've been fucked with.
Okay.
They've been fucked
you're,
with and
you're
whatever.
One of those.
I'm one of, well, no, there's a reason I'm saying this. 4 through 6 is my Star Wars. You know, they've been fucked with or whatever, but they've also, you can still see them in their original form for the most part. And those are the movies that I have any kind of emotional attachment to. The prequels, obviously, we all have a complicated relationship with, some more than others. I don't really have to own them. Some people like to be completists and have all that. I just don't care. They're bad movies to me.
I own them, but it did take me a while to come to that.
Right.
It was actually The Force Awakens. I wanted to rewatch all Star Wars, everything before that came out, just because it was like a fever how excited I was for The Force Awakens.
Right. And for me specifically, I didn't have that fever. I thought, like, don't
see,
really.
See, I didn't have that as much with this one.
For me, I think that's a good thing, because when I went and saw Force Awakens with basically my feelings on the subject was I don't need more Star Wars in my life. I really don't. I was pleasantly surprised by it, and I thought there was a lot of fun, and I was surprised by how in it I was and how ready I was for these new characters, for this new world, how vindicated I felt, you know, for all of the shit that we had to wade through, that we finally got to this, and it's its own thing and it's fun, and I have my issues with Force Awakens, but I thought that was basically a really good movie, and I really enjoyed everything that was happening. And I feel like that's my feeling going into these, is like, because my emotional attachment is not connected to whatever is happening now, I can have less fan issues or whatever. When they decide to depart.
It doesn't burn your core.
Yes. If they're good, great. And so far, I've really enjoyed them. And I really enjoy this. In fact, I think I enjoy this one a little bit more than Force Awakens. Because, like a lot of people have stated, one of my biggest issues of Force Awakens was it was very, very, very beholden to the structure of A New Hope. And this one has very similar structural things to Empire, but I think
that's one of the things that's like been gnawing at me, it like the visceral. So there's a very loud minority of people who have not liked it. For some reason, the fan community is split. And
I want to wait for that a little bit. I want to talk a little bit more about what we thought about before we get into that.
But specifically, my point was, I saw a lot of shades of Empire and
sure,
and even a little bit of Return of the Jedi in this. That I was like, I don't totally understand the criticism of, oh, it's not a Star Wars movie. Like, sure. But yeah, okay.
What I liked about it, and what I think makes it for me a little bit better than Force Awakens, is that, you know, and it's, I think, speaks to the difference between J.J. Abrams as a writer-director and Rian Johnson as a writer-director. Abrams is a terrific mimic, and that's what he's done throughout his entire career, is he knows how to make something that feels like Spielberg or feels like Lucas or feels like whatever his influence for that particular project is. I don't think he's really has much of a voice outside of his ability to mimic. Whereas I think Rian Johnson does have more of a directorial presence and voice on this film, to some people's chagrin. I found it a welcoming thing, and I actually like the fact that he runs up to these Star Wars narrative cliches that we've seen, all of this, you know, Greek tragedy family stuff, all of the power struggle stuff, all of these, you know, speeches about the dark side and the light side and, you know, not succumbing to the dark side, all of these things that we're very, very familiar with in the lore, the canon, the mythology. He runs up to those cliches and then takes sharp left turns. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what I found to be really enjoyable about this movie, is how we would approach the common tropes that we see in other Star Wars movies, and then it would either flip it on its head or do it from another direction. Mm-hmm. And I really, really had a good time with the film because of that. Also, I still love these characters. They even introduce a new character who was not in the last one, this Rose character, who is played by Kelly Marie Tran.
Yes.
And she's terrific, and I really liked the character a lot.
Also, let's not forget the fucking ultimate space badass, Laura Dern.
Yeah, I mean, holy, you know, I am generally pro Laura Dern in most aspects of my life.
Anyway. Yeah,
she has a cool moment in the movie. She has a few cool moments in the movie. She's a welcome addition to the cast as well. I really like these characters a lot, and it speaks to my thing, I guess, as a film viewer. If you get the characters right and you care about them and you make me care about them, plot stuff I can kind of deal with, or I can kind of work with, especially if things start to become a stretch or if things start to run out of the way of genre comfortabilities or whatever. If I'm in with those characters, I'm in, and I'm in with these characters.
I agree. I agree. I will admit, I do think there are a couple problems with the movie.
Sure, I do too.
I think there are some serious pacing issues, which are sort of a bit of a thorn in the side of this movie. I think there's some logical leaps also that are a little strange. There's definitely they definitely take liberties with the timeline and just like the thought of space travel.
Uh-huh.
Like space travel is almost non-existent. And so there are a few issues as far as time related subjects, but I cannot remember. I think it must have been when I was a kid, the last time I was this thrilled by a Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, ultimately, isn't that what we're signing up for with Star Wars? I'm not signing up for a nostalgia trip. Like, the old movies exist. I can get that. I want a rollicking space adventure that's going to take me in places I didn't expect. I want it to surprise me. I want moments to go, holy fuck, and I did that in this.
There were a few, there's a lot of big risks that this screenplay takes. And
I think, to me, they paid off. Mm-hmm. I don't totally understand the fan hate that exists. And like I said, I do think it's going to kind of fade away. My biggest fear is that I think what's going to happen is J.J. Abrams is coming back, and it's going to be sort of a return to form, which I think is okay for this trilogy to have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some stuff that I'm like, how's he going to deal with that? All right. But
it's not like they're making this up as they go. Like, people are acting like Rian Johnson came in there and would, like, you know, some crazy artist.
That was a point I was going to make, actually, is, you know, they've developing this in the studio. Mm-hmm. Kathleen Kennedy's been a script supervisor for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's sort of taken George Lucas's place as the dungeon master, if you will. But yeah, I mean, it was fucking. Also, I think this is the most visually gorgeous Star Wars has been, and it's a franchise that's known for being visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, the set design, the planet design, the creature design, porgs. Can we talk about porgs? I could start up my own fucking podcast called the Porg Cast.
Okay. Look, I think it's actually interesting that there's so much Porg discussion when they have little to nothing to do with the movie. Like, the, I was expecting a lot more Porg, given how much Porg there was online before.
It's just they're adorable. I actually think there was the perfect amount of Porg. okay, that's not true. I am still vying for my solo Porg adventure, a la the Ewok adventure.
Okay, now when you say solo Porg adventure, you're not saying Han Solo and the Porgs.
No. I'm saying we could have a Porg only film. I mean, sure, maybe some orphans could get stranded on Porg Island or whatever, but just give me more Porgs.
Well,
more
there
Porgs.
Are those, like, those weird alien nuns that live on that planet. You could do a movie about them, I guess.
Sure. I'd be into that as long as it's mostly Porg. my point is, like, we've got more new original creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the movie does take... There's a little bit of a speed bump in the middle when they go to Mar-a-Lago.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
I like that sequence, and I like...
No, here's the thing. I didn't dislike it, uh-huh. But to me, that's where a lot of the pacing issues came from. And to me, I actually... One of the things I appreciated is it's one of the more, like, relevant sequences as far as, like, the current political climate goes. And Star Wars right. wasn't exactly known for making... you know, sharp socio-political commentary.
No.
And there's some shots fired in that sequence in particular.
I think some of that is intentional. I think obviously the most obvious thing, the crawler at the beginning, they capitalize the word resistance the first time they use it. And
it was capitalized in The Force Awakens as well.
During the crawler?
Uh-huh.
I'd have to look at it again. Obviously that stuff rings differently now. And I think yes. to some degree that might have been integrated. You know, there's a lot of speeches about resisting and fighting tyranny and those kind of things that are made throughout. And I know that even some people on the right have been critical towards the movie for being a quote-unquote anti-Trump movie. I'm sorry if your president resembles fictitious fascist leaders too much.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sorry. Go fuck yourselves.
Anyway. My issues with the movie are a couple things. I think it's a little long. It's 2.5 hours long, and for me, there was a natural ending point where basically all of our main conflicts were resolved in some form or another. Then the movie kind of keeps going for another 25 minutes. And I didn't mind those 25 minutes. They were thrilling, exciting, blah, blah, blah. Advanced the story, and they found a new endpoint. But it did feel like a fourth act. And because of that, I felt like I was like, whoa, okay, how much longer are we going? I kind of felt like I was free-floating a little bit until we got to the end.
I think that sort of depends on how you're viewing the movie.
Well, if
you're viewing Luke Skywalker as the main character,
mm-hmm.
then it's
I see it what paced you're saying.
Exactly right.
I'm not saying that the stuff that happens in that last little chunk there doesn't need to be included. I mean, I think that you could start the next movie at that point and it would still work just as well. I just felt like there was a point when like all of the conflicts that have been set up before that point had come to some sort of resolve, and I thought a satisfying one for the movie, and that was a 2-hour mark. That's a perfectly good length for a movie, and then it kind of keeps going, and that's when I start to feel the length. The other issue I have with it, and I know that you said this wasn't as big of an issue for you, but there is some weird anachronistic kind of hokey humor here or there, and I'm not saying I want the movie to be super grim and dark. It's already pretty dark. And there is humor throughout that works. That's character driven and dialogue driven. There's some.
Do you
gags.
Have an example?
Yes. The opening line of the movie had me quite worried. There's a gag at the beginning of the movie that, you know, is making reference to like cell phone commercials, taglines for cell phone commercials. And it's a little robot chickeny for and a little too cheeky I think, for the Star Wars universe. And there's
spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
What are you talking? Because here's the thing. All I hear is people saying, there's the jokes don't play. Or I didn't get that. I didn't feel it at all.
Every once in a while. Not all the time. But I could see why if somebody who already has a problem with
But do
with
you
the
have an example?
Would,
that's what I mean.
Yes,
like
the opening joke of the movie when Poe Dameron is trying to get in contact with Domhnall Gleeson, who, let's call him a little bit of a problem, too. I think he overacts the shit out of these movies. Call Domhnall Gleeson and he's like, yeah, I'll hold. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Like that joke, that's the opening like bit of dialogue in this movie. Now is like, oh boy, what are we getting into now? And then it gets a lot better and I forgot about it. But there are every once in a while, there's some
stuff.
I don't know what the
problem with that was, though. Like, again, it's
not a Star Wars joke. It's anachronistic and it's pop culture-y and it's weird.
How's it pop culture?
Because it's making direct reference to cell phone ads from like 10 years ago.
How? I don't see. That's
the
what I don't get.
The
like,
can you hear me? The can you hear me now? That's a cell
that's
phone.
That's not. That's
that was a. I didn't. That was a whole I ad campaign get, for like.
I Sprint. Disagree. I disagree. I to me it was just. I didn't get any shades of cell phone shit, and I guess if I had, that would have annoyed me. But to me, it was just like, oh, he's fucking with him. Like, I didn't.
I'm not saying it made or broke the movie.
No, here's the thing. That actually, I actually liked that because I was primed for. I mean, typically, again, it's twisting the genre convention of typically in space they hail each other and they communicate their demands and they sort of bolster and you know, build to this conflict. And in this, it was just like, oh, Poe's just fucking with him. Like he's just that kind of guy,
which is in line with the character. He's this trilogy's Han Solo.
So I don't get the I don't see how it's a pop culture reference. It is.
I'm sorry that you don't see it, but it clearly was.
I don't fuck that.
But whatever. I don't want the whole discussion to be about whether the jokes work. I think some of them do, some of them don't.
I didn't have an I none of them stood out as weird or. Out of context of the universe to me at all. So I don't get it. One of the things I was actually afraid of based on like the marketing was that this was going to be a super serious grim fest.
Yeah,
and so I really appreciated the humor because I mean, I think a lot of people were expecting sort of the last beat of one of the character arcs to happen, and I wasn't sure if I was emotionally prepared for that. Mm-hmm. So I needed some lightheartedness and some jokes and some goddamn levity. It's a goddamn space adventure.
Again, not a problem for the entire movie, but every once in a while there was some dialogue that clanged.
Yeah, agree to disagree.
Although I'll say on the record, Star Wars has never been known for great dialogue. But anyway, the last thing where I audibly went, what, we'll call it the Carrie Fisher Peter Pan moment.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people had problems with that. Didn't bug me.
That was the only time where I was like, whoa, okay, things, we can do that now, I guess.
The only reason why I could see that as being frustrating or problematic is... obviously we don't know what's going to happen to that character in the next movie because of the unfortunate passing of Carrie Fisher. And I do think it felt like that was building to something, particularly with her, you know, having force powers and finally using them. But to me, that was kind of a little bit of the start of some payoff from the promise of return to the Jedi. Mm. With the promise of there being another Force user. You know, we've never seen any indication that Princess Leia has any sort of control or Force powers at all. So I actually thought it was kind of cool. I was like, oh, fuck yeah, she's learned some shit.
Okay. Yeah.
It didn't bother me.
It just seemed out of the realms of the mythology that we're familiar with. Or what the rules that they set up.
But this is expanding on that. And that's something I loved is I don't think it contradicts anything from the previous movies. And I think that's sort of where some of the fanboy issues are coming from, is they're like, but the rules are this. But it's like, okay, nobody's saying that that didn't apply. We're just going further. Yeah, we're saying more we don't know. The Force is this mysterious power that goes through the entire universe. You're telling me that even the Jedi have it completely figured out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I say some things I did like?
Yes, please. I would also like to say things I liked.
I really did like the relationship, which I think is central to the movie, the relationship between Rey and Kylo Ren. I think the stuff between those two characters and these scenes, you know, and the way that they're directed and the way that they're written is fascinating. And to me, that's, you know, call me the whatever kind of genre fan I am, that's the stuff that hooks me in.
That's the juice. I agree. I mean, I think all Star Wars, the best Star Wars has to offer is this sort of battle of dualistic philosophies. And if we can get that in these two characters that are interesting in their own right and don't know what the fuck either of them are doing, and we see them trying to figure shit out as they go, and it's done with a cool psychic sci-fi backdrop, fuck yeah.
It was really well written and really well staged, very well acted too. And, you know, one of my beefs with Force Awakens was I thought Kylo Ren worked well enough as a villain, but I kind of got the complaints that he was kind of emo and sort of...
I could see the argument that it felt like they were trying too hard to make a new Darth Vader.
To make a new Darth Vader, yeah. And that he was ultimately too subservient and a little too... there was all these things that made the villain just not as cool as he looked or was trying to be. Which I would argue is kind of the point of that character. But this movie, I think, really fixes that. And now I think he's one of the most interesting characters in the series.
I agree. And there's so many... I agree. 100%. I love Kylo Ren because I never knew what he was going to do next. He was he was such a wild card, but in the best way. It was...
Mm-hmm.
But you never knew what he was going to do, but every time he would do something, it was like, oh yeah, of course. Let's talk about the mid... okay, again, spoilers. This is a spoiler. This is straight up spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things of the movie, which I know a lot of fanboys have sort of raged about, was killing Snoke.
Whoa.
I told you. I gave a spoiler warning.
That's the conclusion of that whole thing. You know, the lead up to and the conclusion of it. And yeah, I thought that was such a bold move. I was like, fuck yeah, now what?
Yeah, exactly. And I never cared about Snoke. I don't give a fuck about his past.
Yeah.
He was always sort of this generic Emperor replacement.
Yeah.
Stand-in. I when that happened, I was like, fuck yes. That is exactly what this movie needs.
Yeah, and if there was a purpose to that character ever, it was for that.
Yeah. It also led to one of the best action battle sequences of the Star Wars franchise, period.
Mm-hmm.
That scene with the fucking payoff with the Red Guards, and then the climax with the Laura Dern's magic space bullet.
Yeah.
Fucking incredible action sequence.
Yeah, I thought that the... you know, we never get to see the Imperial Guard be badass. They're always just kind of there standing. Finally, we get to actually see them fight, which was cool, in a really cool, stylized setting.
The set design for that scene was so cool, too. It was like Star Wars, but with this weird sort of musical Yul Brynner, the King and I backdrop. I loved it.
I did, too. And also, like, I've heard a lot of complaints about... there's no lightsaber battles. That's like one of the best ones of the series.
Yes. 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 That, like, really? You're going to tell like me that is a less cool action sequence than Darth Vader fighting Obi-Wan Kenobi when they're just kind of poking light sticks at each other in episode 4? Like, fucking really? Bring it on, nerds.
I thought that was...
That sequence was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would say the movie would have been worth it alone just for that sequence. Like, that was their Phantom Menace cool action payoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's more to Star Wars than just lightsaber battles, obviously.
Yes. And also... So, my three favorite parts of the movie were that action sequence, mm-hmm. since we're in full-on spoiler territory now.
I guess
now.
So.
I won't go into too much detail about what happens, but the cameo from the Force Ghost.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought that was really well used and really well placed.
Loved
it. Yeah, worked really well.
And the end sequence, where we see how big of a badass Luke has become.
Yes, I thought that was cool. I really like that. I love that the look of that sequence with the red salt and all of that. I still think that whole chunk should have been the beginning of the next movie, though, just for pacing reasons. But yes,
I have a feeling the next movie's gonna, I think there's gonna be a bit of a time jump, because there was like no time between The Force Awakens and this, which I think was great. But I think the next one, I think there needs to be a little bit of a time shift between. So I don't think that would have worked. I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen next.
No,
and that's really
awesome.
Exciting.
Like, because when Force Awakens ended and she went to go to the planet to train with Luke, I was like, okay, so this is what's going to happen. It's going to do this. It's going to do that.
Yeah.
And it, like I said, it runs up to those cliches. And then...
And literally throws them off a cliff.
Yeah, and I love it. I love that about this movie. And I think this is one of them. I think this is one of the most story-centric Star Wars movies.
Yes.
And I also think that... I also love the fact that Rian Johnson and company, and I'll give the credit to J.J. Abrams as well for the last movie. I love the fact that he uses the classic Star Wars characters as more than just cameos. He actually gives them something to do and, mm-hmm. and integrates them in the plot in interesting ways. You know, we never get to see people like Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill like in movies nowadays. They're just not there. And here they are kicking ass and, you know, mm-hmm. commanding scenes on their own. And
I think this was the most Princess Leia has ever had, like, gotten to do. Mm-hmm. Story-wise.
At least since the first one, yeah.
Yeah. And I also think this movie does, even though it throws a lot of the rules out the window, I don't mean literally.
I don't think it does.
Here's the thing. I think it's still pretty beholden to the philosophies of the first trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And really what the first trilogy is all about, like... I love the sort of stripping away the mythos of the Skywalker legacy, because ultimately that's what Luke Skywalker was supposed to be. He was supposed to be, you know, this farm boy who was accepted into a – you know what I mean? Like that idea that any one of us could be a Skywalker is a really powerful idea that I think – ultimately is more Star Wars than what the fanboys want.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't completely understand. You know, I mean, you can complain about pacing, you can complain about the jokes, you can complain about things that are cosmetic, but I really don't understand, like, what they wanted. Or I've also heard some people say the aesthetic look of the movie just isn't Star Wars. I will say that Johnson has a slightly different eye. Like, there's some helicopter shots and stuff that feel very much like something we would not see in one of these movies, but I like that.
It's in line with the visual language of The Force Awakens, though. Like
I can tell a difference.
The lightsabers feel a little more powerful, a little more elemental. Mm-hmm. The Force feels very raw. You know, like you get those bass noises a little bit more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, like everything does feel a bit heightened. And I do get that is a modern sensibility. Like, compare that to the way the Force is used in any of the other Star Wars movies. It is different.
Mm-hmm.
So I can kind of understand that. I just don't Yeah, I don't know what they wanted.
Okay, so should I read Mike's official review?
Sure.
Okay, here it is. Because at one point online, when I was talking about how the fan reaction seems to be pretty different from the critical reception, which is positive, mm-hmm. There's some sort of thing out there saying that like these are just like internet bots that are like flooding Rotten Tomatoes with the user review with negative user reviews.
I've heard some of that, but I have heard some pretty negative stuff on like Twitter. I
think it's real. I think it's real. I think this movie, for all the risks it takes, there are some people who are not with it, and Mike Valick seems to be one of them. He says, "Dog shit." I am sad to say I will not see any more until Lucas and Bert come back. I honestly think there are too many problems to critically review. But where are our new world's new alien friends that had real personalities? What is the new myth? The theater I was in was full of people and were giving pity laughs by the end. I'm not sure the movie has pushed boundaries. I'm not sure it made choices at all. I'm not sure if he saw the same movie.
Well, I mean, okay. Here's what I will speak to, as far as that goes. Because when I spoke with Mike before about Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
I think there is a fan base that puts a lot of emphasis on the sort of mythos of the Jedi, the mythos of the Skywalkers, and bringing balance to the Force, and the idea of this
legacy,
Campbellian chosen one adventure story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the fans that feel the most betrayed.
Yeah, this movie, I would say, challenges that stuff the most.
Yes, because we're not getting anything about this sort of prophecy. The prophecy of the chosen one that will bring balance to the Force,
mm-hmm.
Was kind of all bullshit. It could seem. Personally, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm excited by that. I've never been a huge fan of the Chosen One myth. Personally, I feel like there's more power. If we're going back to our original introduction to the idea of the Force,
mm-hmm.
being this all-powerful force that flows through everything in the universe.
Yeah.
And we know through the language of Star Wars that there are people that are strong with the Force. Wouldn't that make sense that even though some people are more intuitive and more strong with the Force, that everyone has access to the Force?
Uh-huh.
And if that's the case, then I don't think I can accept the idea of this Chosen One legacy. And I don't necessarily think we should. I think, if anything, the previous films might support that reading. We were told Anakin was going to be a chosen one to bring balance to the Force, and the pressure of that turned him into Darth Vader.
Uh-huh.
I think some people interpreted that as the balance. Then we get the same thing again with Luke. And I think the idea that Luke failed in this destiny,
uh-huh.
is what upsets people.
Well, the fact that is a new trilogy, the fact that the end of the story isn't episode 6,
yes.
already proves, you know, that there's, you know, a growing dark, that there's even another growing dark side, another empire to fight, and that there is, you know, these characters like Snoke and mm-hmm. and Kylo Ren prove that that Luke was not that guy.
Exactly.
And so maybe there never was a guy. And this movie even, you know, goes so far as to say that the legends themselves are irrelevant.
Exactly. And I liked that. But I think
uh-huh.
I can see how I can see a mentality behind not wanting that challenged, but behind thinking, you know, well, that's not what we've been told with Star Wars. Oh. And I think that's why I liked the Yoda scene so much, is because I think, again, Yoda proves wise with his philosophy. And at the end of the day, I think there is a huge philosophical component behind Star Wars and the idea of lightness and darkness. And I love the idea that that maybe, you know, there are gray areas within that. Mm-hmm. I love how they challenged Luke as a character. Like, it would have been really boring to me if he was just sort of a Yoda.
Or just another Ben.
Or even if he came back as sort of this penultimate badass. I think when he does have his hero's moment in this movie, it is all the more satisfying because of it.
Pays off, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Do you want to give it a letter grade?
I don't know. It's like a B plus for me.
I'd give it an A minus.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to the Netflix homework, which you assigned me last week. El Camino Christmas.
Yeah, we don't have to spend too long on this.
I don't think so. What is this movie about?
Oh, God. So this kid is rolling through town. El Camino.
New Mexico, I think.
Yeah. It's somewhere, it's a desert town. It's sort of a desert Christmas movie. Yeah, so this kid is rolling through town, El Camino, looking for his dad, who he's never met. It's sort of a sleepy town with some sort of unsavory cops. One of them, in particular, played by Vincent D'Onofrio, is sort of a drunk and a no good Nick himself. He sees this kid running through town. He decides to rough him up. He just has this instinct that he's trouble. The movie sort of tries to set it up like he might be. While he's looking for his dad, he comes across Tim Allen, who's just also sort of a town drunk. Seems like there's a lot of town drunks in this town. And losers. Then we got a couple of other police, Dax Shepard and the dad from That 70s Show. And then there's this girl with her autistic son. And basically this new guy comes into town, he runs across all these characters, and then they, through circumstance, get barricaded into a gas station on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, a liquor store.
And it sort of becomes a hostage situation due to miscommunication. And it ends in sort of a shootout. And yeah.
Right. So, geez.
So I do want to say, I was expecting this movie to be more of a comedy.
I was too, given the title and the first third of the movie.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be just sort of a shitty, like, Lifetime goofy Spirit of Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. And it's not that.
No, I'm not sure what it ended up being is something that's better than that, though. This movie is really bad, but it's bad in such a complex way that is really difficult to say why. I mean, the humor of it is non-existent.
And whatever humor they're going for is really base and broad, and just like the idea, for some reason there's this idea in people's heads that there is sort of the humor that comes out of the juxtaposition of the wholesomeness of Christmas and the unwholesomeness of, like, people being drunk.
Right.
I've never really gotten that. I've never been a fan of
that trope.
People the idea of people being alcoholics at Christmas is funny inherently in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Because it's not, like, a lot of people drink at Christmas. There's a lot of Christmas parties that encourage drinking. And
Well,
and I don't know. I just like the way they sort of play alcoholism in this movie is
weird.
The most broad,
especially considering where the movie goes. The first half of the movie, is set up like a comedy, and you have Dax Shepard who's playing this Barney Fife's like stupid police officer who makes dumb decisions all the time. And then, but I didn't really get that from his performance because he wasn't really acting all that different from the other characters. I just kind of got that through the context of the dialogue, like halfway through. I'm like, oh, he's supposed to be like really dumb, I guess.
Yeah.
Because he seemed right on par with everybody else in the movie. And then like you have this ridiculous stuff with this, you know, you talk about the woman with her autistic kid or whatever. But then she has this like lush mother who's like sleeping around and the blah, blah, blah. And so the first half of it's like setting up. There's all these different story threads. You also forgot Jessica Alba as the careerist pregnant news anchor.
So did the movie. Yeah. So did the movie.
Right.
It was like every time they cut back to her, I was like, oh yeah, god damn.
So that's happening. And then out of nowhere, the movie all of a sudden takes this like, you know, cloudy, dark turn and wants to be like this Dog Day Afternoon kind of thing. And it just did not earn that. I did not give any enough shits about any of these characters to have any kind of stakes for whatever the situation was supposed to happen.
Shots
are fired, people are bleeding, everyone's having these like deep conversations about, you know, war and their histories and like abandonment, and I'm just like, I am not with you, movie.
Yeah, it takes a turn, and not in a good way. And I guess that's what frustrated me about this movie. It was like, I was not expecting it to be good, but I was sort of expecting it to be sort of fun bad, like a Lifetime original movie.
Sure.
But it's not. Like, it's so tonally all over the place that I couldn't even, like, enjoy not liking it.
Yeah, tone deaf.
Yeah, like, I mean, goddamn, when they are holed up in the... Man, Tim Allen's fucking rambling diatribes that they try to pass off as a fucking monologue,
right,
are so prophetically stupid.
You know, it seemed like the type of movie that a better comedy like a Tropic Thunder would be making fun of. Like, if this were a movie within a movie, like, if it was about how Tim Allen, actor Tim Allen, made shitty movies and they cut to this every once in a while.
Yes.
That would be totally on point.
Like a meta movie within a movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like, how, that's... like, comically over the top it is sometimes.
Yeah, and Vincent D'Onofrio is...
Who I'm going to say on the record is largely a terrible actor. I am not a Vincent D'Onofrio fan. Every once in a while... his specific style of bad acting works with what he's doing, and for some reason he's in harmony with the screenplay and with the director, in spite of what I think are his terrible instincts. This movie is not one of them.
No, he is like off the charts in this. It's not good. I mean, it's not really even worth saying. The best part, okay, I was having a little more fun when it does take the dramatic turn, because then I was like, oh, okay, this is absolute garbage.
Right.
The best part is when, spoilers if you give a fuck, but you shouldn't.
Don't worry.
There's this like really bloody dramatic shootout. For no reason.
Like, out of nowhere,
Out of nowhere. Also, all of this is built on simple miscommunication, which could have been cleared up very easily, and I hate that as a plot device.
Right.
Just going on record, it's really lazy writing. But anyway, so there's this bloody shootout. But a couple characters, well, one of them dies, one of them... Ugh. don't get me started on that stinger at the end.
Okay.
the beach scene.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, because there's also this weird
postscript for all the characters, like, we really give a shit about what happened to them.
Yeah, in this, like, sort of, like, trying to be commentary on race, I think. I don't know. Really lazy, really tone deaf. anyway, so there's a shootout. And then this kid who we're told that he can't talk, that he might be somewhere on the spectrum of autism. And then the guy is just sort of nice to him. Like, he buys him cake for no reason, by the way. Uh-huh. Creepy. I'm going on record as saying that dude is creepy.
Yeah.
A dude who just randomly buys a kid cake in a diner because kids should have cake is a creep. He's Roy Moore in training. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, later he, like, fixes his remote control or whatever. And then the shootout happens, and the kid doesn't want to leave this blood-soaked store. And then the guy, the main character, hands him his RC car, and he goes, thank you.
Yeah.
Through the miracle of Christmas violence, this kid's autism is cured? I don't know. It was right up there with one of my favorite bad cheeseball moments. Like at the end of Volcano, when the little black kid is looking for his family, but everyone's covered with ash, and he goes up to a fireman, and the fireman's like, "Where's your family?" And the kid just goes, "I don't know. We all look the same." And it's this weird commentary on race out of nowhere, no other context in the movie,
right?
That's what that reminded me of. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Congratulations to us for making a Volcano reference 2 weeks in a row.
Wait, we did?
Yeah. This movie's wretched. Don't see it. However, I do recommend Dog Day Afternoon, which this movie really wants to be out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. Dog Day Afternoon's great. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of Pacino's best movies.
Mm-hmm. And even if you're going to do Dog Day Afternoon parodies, just watch Airheads.
That's all this, actually. I'm glad you brought that up. That was all this movie made me want, was just to, like, rewatch Airheads, because it's actually good and funny.
Yeah, this movie is garbage, but I've been kind of saying this about Netflix original product for a little while. I don't think all of their stuff is garbage. I think every once in a while they make some good movies too, and obviously, like, Beasts of No Nations and some of their television, you know, Stranger Things and stuff like that. But I think
I kind of wonder about that. Like, why do they churn out some of this stuff that's so unnecessary?
I think stuff like this or XOXO, which was awful. And
or the Christmas Prince,
or the Christmas Prince,
which I almost made us watch,
or that Bill Murray Christmas thing from last year that was directed by Sofia Coppola, of all people.
Tread lightly.
There's all this stuff on there that's just content-y. It's not about being good. It's not about putting any kind of thought or effort into it. It's about, we just want to have a lot of content to blow out. And I
don't get it. Like, Why not focus on
all those Adam Sandler originals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why not focus on the next Stranger Things or I don't know.
It's just clicky. It's just clicky stuff. It's like, well, Christmas is obviously, people are going to be looking for Christmas stuff, and rather than paying for the rights for other people's movies, if we make our own, then it's all profit down the road.
Yeah.
So
I guess that's the problem with Netflix having original content, is they're getting away from the original appeal of Netflix, which was access to movies.
Right, yeah. And like I said, they make good stuff too. They're enough good stuff to justify them having an original content branch. But
yes,
it is starting to get a little content-y.
But here's the thing. I'm afraid that it's going to dilute some of the relevancy of that,
right?
You know, like will pushing out movies like El Camino Christmas and, you know, Christmas Prince and stuff, will that hurt their brand? Will that hurt, like, you know, their chances to be taken seriously, like to win awards and uh-huh. acclaim and things like that? I don't know.
I don't either. I think it's too early to tell.
I'm afraid that they're. I just think it's the wrong allocation of resources. Mm-hmm. Like, don't turn into a sci-fi, you know?
Right.
Which I need to watch.
I think it's.
I mean, sci-fi is trying to rebrand. So
right, that's true. I think what we're seeing now is kind of the equivalent of the directed VHS movie or the directed DVD movie.
But it's just strange because it's coming from a specific studio that is also churning out stuff that's like serious contenders for critical acclaim. Mm-hmm. Like, why do both? I guess I just don't get it. But maybe El Camino Christmas, maybe that helped pay for Stranger Things.
I don't think that Netflix as a brand is as concerned with having a specific brand identity. I think that they just want to be a hub for content. And I think they have different aims for different types of content. And I think the aims for El Camino Christmas and Christmas Prince or XOXO, these kinds of things, is just about appealing to a very specific market during a very specific time of the year.
Well, if they're not careful, Amazon might swoop past them.
Maybe. Okay, so next week I'm going to have us watch the 1954 film White Christmas, directed by Michael Curtiz, starring Bing Crosby. I've never seen it. List of shame. We're going to get to it.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't get to watch a lot of Halloween stuff because we were moving during that time period.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been trying to go more into the Christmas side of things. Yeah, so this is a classic.
Yep. There was even a Christmas horror anthology that I thought about assigning, but I said, you know what? Let's do Christmas.
Yeah.
Let's do Christmas let's do proper. It. And that's the show. If anybody has any comments on any of the things we talked about today, whether it be our opinions on Star Wars, whether it be El Camino Christmas, or the ideas of what is Netflix trying to be, you can contact us at our email at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find our archives and our RSS feed at jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. You can follow us on Twitter at JabberPodcast. You can follow me individually at BC Cassidy. What's your stuff?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Keith Foster Kid. You can follow me on Instagram at Keith Foster Kid. You can find me on Facebook. I think I just confirmed a show date coming up in January. I don't know if I should plug it yet. I guess I could start now. January 30th, I'll be at the All-Star Comedy Jam in Chula Vista. I'll get more details.
Okay.
It'll be the end of January. So, also, hopefully, I'll have some more shows, some exciting stuff to announce. I've been putting out some feelers for some stuff. So.
Okay. And you can stream the podcast at Google Play, Player.fm, Pocket Cast, the Windows Podcast Network, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio. We have friends who do podcasts. You should also be listening to Rod and Denise at The Listening Party. They just released their last episode under the old format, the listener submission format, and they played every song rather than picking just 10. And I'm excited to see what they do in the next year with this. I think what they're going to be doing is they're going to be bringing on guests to curate an episode rather than taking multiple submissions.
Oh, okay.
But I'm excited for that. And Rod said something, in an episode, the last episode or the episode before, about whether or not I would be comfortable with him calling me a friend or just a podcast friend. You're a friend. I know you. We've met in real life. That's all I need.
Have you?
Yeah. The first time I did their show, I did it at their house.
Oh, cool.
So yes, you can call me a friend. I give you the permission.
Aww.
And then I'm excited to maybe one day be on the new format.
Yeah.
Also listen to Denise's podcast, The Mascot Diaries. I think she's only going to 50 episodes before calling that a quits. So, you know, they're half hour episodes. They're really fun interviews with local and non-local mascots. Be sure to listen to Mike Fallick's podcast, who sent us the audio clip today at, Let's Make a Cult, or Let's Start a Cult. Sorry. And that's a fun one. You can also listen to Patrick and Dennis at Almost Educational and Patrick and his father at Make Dad Read Comics. Does your friend still do Blizzlet?
Yeah, my friend does Blizzlet, I think. I don't know, I haven't listened to it because I'm not into Hearthstone, but...
if you are.
I think...
Huh? If you are.
Yeah, and I think he's been doing good stuff. I might have mentioned this. I think I'm going to guest on Adam Connie's podcast, I Am Adam Connie. I've been kind of putting it off for a little bit, just because I haven't, you know, I've been busy and stuff, but in the new year, I think I'm gonna pop on there. So
cool.
Look out for that. Oh, it's the Adamant podcast. Adamant.
And until next week, that's all we got.
Give it to Gosling.
Bye.